You. And again, welcome. So this is going to be held like a normal live argument. You've got 15 minutes per side, unless petitioner wants to reserve some. Well, I mean, either way, you get 15 minutes per side. I'm going to be timing. I suggest you do the same. I'll let you know when your time's up. Right now, does petitioner want to reserve some time for rebuttal?
We'll reserve 3 minutes.
Okay, great. That's granted, and you may proceed, petitioner.
Thank you. If it pleases the court, my name is Sandra Green, counsel for Jarvin Lopez, a native and citizen of El Salvador, who has asked this court to review the adverse determination of the Board of Immigration Appeals, which dismissed his appeal. Specifically, Mr. Lopez sought to utilize both a special rule cancellation of removal application along with the 212H waiver of inadmissibility. He has conviction for a minor marijuana offense. Mr. Lopez has asserted that the board's legal rationale for the denial of the requested relief was inadequate and has requested that this board review that board determination.
If I could interrupt you for a second, you're familiar, I'm sure, with In re YNP, the
yes.
BIA decision, presidential, and I know you can make the argument that is distinguishable because that was a different special rule that the petitioner there was relying upon to get the 212H waiver. Let's assume that we conclude that even though it's different, it's not sufficiently different to distinguish in that YNP, if it doesn't control, at least we have to give it serious consideration. Given that, how would we rule in your favor within the parameters of the BIA's decision in YNP and also Bustamante, which was decided before YNP?
Well, Your Honor, with respect to Bustamante, the board itself acknowledged that Bustamante is of a different nature because it doesn't deal with special rule cancellation of removal. It's a case that deals with what the board has called regular cancellation of removal. So I think Bustamante is of limited use for this court for purposes of its adjudication of a petition. With respect to YNP, I think the board made two errors. The first mistake was that, well, the board acknowledges in YNP that although it calls cancellation of removal regular cancellation of removal, individuals such as Mr. Lopez have to establish either that they're not admissible or that they're not deportable, whereas other applicants for cancellation of removal have to establish that they haven't been convicted of a specific
right, but you would concede that your client is not petitioning for cancellation of removal. The cancellation of removal is something which follows automatically as a matter of law, actually, if he is afforded the Attorney General's favorable exercise of discretion and gets the waiver. Given the wording and the way that it's worded in the statute and also the regulations where it focuses on one is seeking or one is petitioning for cancellation of removal, why wouldn't the distinction that YNP makes still be pretty persuasive here? Because Mr. Lopez is not really petitioning for cancellation of removal. He's hoping to get that relief as a result of the Attorney General's exercise of discretion, but that's not what he's petitioning for.
Is the court saying that he's not, I mean, he has a special rule cancellation of removal is cancellation of removal. So does the court mean he's not actually applying for adjustment of status because he's not filing a form I-485? Is that what the court is asking?
Well, yeah, basically that he's not, it looks to me like you can clearly make the argument that since cancellation of removal automatically follows upon, I'm sorry, adjustment of status, adjustment of status automatically follows upon him getting the waiver, but he's not petitioning for or asking for adjustment of status. Were there other situations where one is formally petitioning for adjustment of status? That does seem to be a distinction that would suggest that YNP's analysis is a rational one and that we should afford it Chevron deference. And given that, I'm wondering how you would prevail unless we were to somehow conclude that YNP was not rational, it is not afforded deference, or that somehow the statute is not ambiguous. That one's a tough argument to make.
Well, I think that I'm glad the court mentioned the ambiguity. The board, as it has, as its decision indicates, seems to be pretty clear that there is no ambiguity. And as government, the respondents indicated in their brief, at least two circuit courts have found that there is ambiguity in the statute. So that in and of itself, I would argue, would require remand, because the board is asserting that it's clear and unambiguous. And circuit courts have said, no, that actually the language is very, very
ambiguous. But counsel, if I can interrupt, I mean, I think what the court has taught post-Chevron, particularly in Kaiser, is we would only get into this deference posture if there were some inability to ascertain ordinary meaning using all the tools of statutory interpretation. So let's put aside for a moment what other courts have done. I'm struggling to see where there isn't a clear reading of the statute here that precludes 212H relief. And I thought Judge McKee summarized it well. As I understand it, what you're trying to do is you're seeking an application for cancellation of removal and saying that effectively is an application for adjustment of status because it results in legal permanent residency. I certainly understand why that argument is being made, but I don't see how that doesn't fight what 212H has said since it was enacted back in 1957. So help me understand where there's some sort of imprecision in the statutory framework.
Well, yeah, what I was mentioning before with the decision in YNP, the board has said that individuals such as Mr. Lopez have to show that they're not inadmissible. And that's the link that changes the form of relief to essentially adjustment of status, which would allow him to apply for a 212H waiver. Because he has to establish that he's not inadmissible, which is the standard for adjustment of status, we are arguing there's a significant difference between that obligation on his part and what is called regular cancellation of removal, which requires only that the alien show he doesn't have a certain type of conviction. Additionally, we would argue that the court should not show Chevron deference to the board's decision because it references the self-defense waiver for VAWA applicants. And it says that the fact that Congress included that waiver, that self-defense waiver, in the body of the cancellation statute to give 212H relief would be superfluous. And we would argue that actually the self-defense waiver is a different type of waiver. It's not a waiver granted to someone after the person has been deemed to be removable for an offense. It's a waiver of the Attorney General's option to prosecute someone who is a victim of domestic violence, but who has been charged with either stalking or a domestic violence offense. So the ability of the Attorney General to decide not to prosecute someone because they have a valid assertion of self-defense is not the same as a 212H waiver. So the fact that the self-defense waiver is incorporated within the body of the VAWA statute, the cancellation statute, does not render the petitioner's argument superfluous. And we would argue that it's not rational and that the court should not accord Chevron deference to it.
So going back to the pre-Chevron analysis question again, I understood you to be arguing that NACARA has effectively amended 212H. And I think you probably would agree NACARA doesn't say that expressly. So what's your argument as to how Section 204's amendment of the INA silently or impliedly or implicitly or contextually or however you would describe it amended 212H so that this contemporaneous relief that the petitioner is seeking could be granted?
Well, again, I would ask the court to look at the standard that the board says is applicable to an alien such as Mr. Lopez. The board in YNP has made the distinction between what the burden of proof is for aliens seeking relief. Individuals such as Mr. Lopez have to establish that they're not deportable. That's not what is applicable to general applicants for cancellation of removal. That's a salient difference, and we believe that that is what connects the petitioner's request for 212H as well as cancellation of removal.
Can I just ask you something? I probably should have asked you right off the bat. I was a little bit confused. On page 18 of your brief, you discuss, quote, the 1998 version of the cancellation statute. I thought that, do you mean by reference? Was there some change? I found that a little bit confusing. I thought we were all looking at the 1997 NACARA statute. You referenced a 1998 one. I don't know if that's a typo or whether there's some real substance to.
That may have been the enactment date, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. So I think we're all talking about the same thing here. I hope.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have anything more, counsel, you'd like to say?
Not at this point. I will reserve comments.
Well, let me, I have another question then. If there is a real ambiguity here and we do get into deference, what type of deference should we give the BIA's decision in this case, where it's a single member, unpublished decision?
I would say it would be minimal deference, Your Honor. It's not a published decision of the board. It's not applicable wide, and for that reason, I would ask for minimal deference.
Okay, great. I ask my colleagues if they have any other questions.
I have none.
No?
Nothing further.
Okay, thank you, counsel. We'll get you on rebuttal, and we'll hear from Mr. Hurley.
May it please the court, James Hurley for the Attorney General. The petition for review should be denied for two reasons. First, the board correctly found that Mr. Lopez could not use a 212H waiver to avoid the stricter standards for NACARA, where he was convicted of a controlled substance offense. And second, there was no due process violation in this case. To go to the first point, as instructed by this court in its December 2018 decision, the board specifically looked at the relationship between the statutes, the regulations, and YNP, and did a thorough analysis of his eligibility in this case. And it walked through the steps, and it found that on its face, 212H just applies to somebody who's applying for a visa, admission, or adjustment of status. And because Mr. Lopez is applying for cancellation of removal, he just doesn't fit within that category.
Counsel, can I ask you, I'm going to pick up where my colleagues left off. Is there an ambiguity here in the view of the government?
Well, we would point to the other two circuit court cases where it's the question that you guys discussed before, where it's the relationship between cancellation and adjustment of status.
You know, we understand what the other circuits said. We're asking you in this case,
yes.
We're not bound by other circuits, but is there an ambiguity here?
There is, because in this case, the NACARA statute says you will get cancellation of removal and adjust your status. So there is some confusion about, and that's what kind of ties in the 212H waiver, where you might think, oh, I can use it. This is adjustment of status. I can use this waiver. But in this case, for NACARA cancellation of removal, the adjustment presupposes that you qualify for cancellation of removal. So you can't get over, you can't use the waiver to get cancellation of removal, because he's asking for cancellation of removal, not for adjustment of status. So that just
counsel, I just want to make sure I understand your argument. I mean, the mere plausibility that there could be possibly a different way to read this, I didn't think that created ambiguity in the Kaiser Chevron sense. I thought what we had to do was use all the ordinary tools of interpretation, including context, and doing that. Is that still your answer, that there is irreconcilable ambiguity?
No, and that's why I was pointing at the other, the circuits and the YNP decision that
why do we need to, just if you, and I don't want to get too far off your point here, but I don't, before you get to that, why as a matter of the statute, why as a matter of NACARA and 212H, do you read this and say, no, there's just no way to make sense of this system?
Yeah, no, but I mean, to return to the point that the Third Circuit remanded this case for us to look to examine the statute, and so there was some, you know, confusion about adjustment of status or cancellation, you know, with the adjustment of status tied in. So it's just, I mean, that's why the court sent it back down to the board anyway, just to clarify and address why, you know, why in this case he didn't qualify or he couldn't use a 212H waiver.
Hold on, I don't think we didn't hold that this was ambiguous, right?
No, you didn't. No, you didn't say it was ambiguous, but you said, please address this and explain it. And that's what happened in this case. You sent it back down to the board, and the board said, okay, we'll walk through these steps. And it followed the same blueprint of the YNP decision that discussed VAWA cancellation. And similarly, it says you can't use this 212H waiver to qualify for VAWA cancellation because for the reason set forth about how, you know, he isn't applying for adjustment. This is a cancellation case, and 212H only applies to, you know, applying for a visa, admission, or adjustment of status. And then you have to look at the NACARA statute itself. There's two separate provisions. There's one for adjustment of status under NACARA, and there's one for cancellation. He's not applying for adjustment under NACARA. He's applying for cancellation. And the whole point
is that, but does that basically, I mean, to take the simplest approach, just looking at the statute and the way it's worded, what you just said is a way out without overthinking this case.
And that's true. And that's what, it's pretty straightforward if you just walk through the steps, and that's what the Third Circuit asked the board to do. They didn't do that in their original 2017 decision. I think they looked at the fact that his controlled substance conviction was from 2015. And they said, well, he doesn't have you need to time it from the date of his conviction for, as far as accruing the continuous physical presence. And, you know, this happened in, you know, 2017 was a board decision then. His conviction was 2015. So they said, oh, he doesn't have the qualified time, so he doesn't get cancellation. But then when we went up to the Third Circuit originally, the court asked for a better explanation about why he didn't qualify for it. So the court set it down to the board, and the board walked through the steps following the same blueprint that it did for the YNP decision. And it said that, okay, let's look at the statute. You know, first he's not applying for a visa or admission or adjustment of status. There are two separate NACARA provisions, one for adjustment, one for cancellation. And as far as the superfluous point, it says, well, when Congress wants you to be able to use a visa or use a waiver, it'll say so. And that's what the 1229B5, that's a waiver for domestic violence. So you can use a waiver there. And then as far as the NACARA regulations, and the court asked about this before, and the board didn't address it before, but they did it now, where they said the NACARA and adjustment of status regulation at 1245.1F says that the sole method for using a 212H waiver is for adjustment under NACARA. And the 1245.3C1 talks about using waivers for NACARA adjustment. Whereas the 1246.6, which is specific for the cancellation or removal under NACARA, doesn't mention anything about waivers. Again, I would just point to the YNP decision where, again, that discussed VAWA, the cancellation of removal there. And similarly, it has, we will cancel the removal for these VAWA applicants and they can adjust status, but you can't use a 212H waiver to qualify for that. So I would again point to the analysis of the two other circuit courts in the Arevalo case in the 11th Circuit and the Garcia Mendez, where they deferred to the board about the analysis in this case. As far as the final points about the, you know, you can't read a general rule of lenity into a statute where Congress hasn't provided for that. The board was correct in that respect as well.
But the rule of lenity doesn't really apply here, though, does it?
Well, it was an argument that was made about whether or not this is just a question of time, whether the 7 versus the 10 years, you know, we can just wait this out. And the board addressed that and said, you know, this isn't just a matter of time. There, it's the requirements are different. It's not only it goes from 10, it goes to 10 years from 7 years. You also have to show a greater amount of hardship between the just
and, extreme and the point at which the clock starts to run is also different in the two statutes. 10 years from X and 7 years from Y is not the same.
Yeah, well, I think the operative date for when the clock starts is when the conviction that puts him into the 212 removability. So mm-hmm. in this case, originally he had TPS from his mom, and then he got convicted of the, in 2009, he had the convictions for the harassment and resisting arrest. So that put him in removal proceedings, you have to look at the record too, where he was originally in proceedings with his sisters, and his sisters qualified for NACARA cancellation. They got that, but then they waited for him because of he had those convictions. And then during proceedings, he got arrested and then had this controlled substance conviction. So that kind of upset the timing. And I think in the original board decision, they said, you know, they denied cancellation of NACARA because they just said, oh, he doesn't have the time, but it didn't really get into detail. And then the Third Circuit sent it back down for the board to flesh it out. And that's what they did in this case.
I asked your adversary as well, assuming we do see an ambiguity, what level of deference do we pay to the BIA's decision here?
Well, as I started in the brief, I said you would apply Chevron deference. But if you find, I noted too that the Third Circuit had a case where it said, you know, we don't apply Chevron for an unpublished one board member decision. So we would say just Skidmore that there was some deference just based on the expertise of the board in this case. And, you know, again, this case, it doesn't entail any kind of analysis of a criminal statute or, you know, a state or federal criminal statute. This isn't removability. It's just purely whether or not he qualifies for either, you know, NACARA cancellation and just studying the relationship with adjustment of status with that. And that's, and the board is expert on that.
Well, notwithstanding our prior decision, it sounds like you're arguing we ought to be applying Chevron deference then.
Well, I would start with that. And if you know, I would make that argument. If you do find ambiguity, if you find it's ambiguous, then you would do that. But if not, if you think, you know, it just stands on its own too. But again, there's a question that it could be ambiguous if, because it says, you know, in the NACARA statute, it says cancellation and removal, and then you get this adjustment right at the end. But again, you have to qualify for cancellation first, and then because that presupposes just adjustment. Because if he qualifies for cancellation, then you don't just, you have to, something has to happen. You're not just in limbo. You get the residency, legal residency as a result of getting that. And that's where the adjustment comes in.
Okay. I have a general question. It's my understanding that most of the deadlines for NACARA relief passed long ago. For purposes of our understanding the breadth of this issue, can you tell us whether there are many of these types of cases, NACARA special rule cancellations, that are still in the system? Or is this this is the last of the group?
I can't really speak to that. I know I've been here for 15 years, and this is, you know, this case has been around for a while. I'm not sure if there's a whole group of those right now or not. I think I can't answer that.
Are you aware of any others that are around, or are you just straight?
I'm not. And in talking with my supervisors, you know, in preparing for the argument, you know, they just made a comment. But again, that's just, you know, just speaking amongst ourselves. So I'm not aware of that. But I can look into it if you'd like me to.
Well, that's okay. I just wondered if you knew. That's all right.
Okay.
Thank you. You can continue. You have a couple minutes if you have anything else you'd like to say.
No, I think I've just made my point where originally when this came up in the Third Circuit had their decision in 2018. They asked the board to look at the interplay between the statutes and the regulations and the YNP decision, and the board did exactly that in this case. And they provided a 7-page detailed analysis of the law and just determined that that Mr. Lopez could not use the 212H waiver to qualify or to avoid the consequences of the heightened requirements for NACARA cancellation of removal.
Okay.
If there are no further questions.
I ask my colleagues, do you have any other things you'd like to ask?
I have nothing further.
Okay.
Nothing further.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We will hear from your adversary in her rebuttal.
Yes, I would just state and again reiterate that the board's analysis was flawed to the extent that it references the self-defense waiver of the VAWA statute as a justification for finding that there's no possibility that Congress intended to permit aliens seeking special rule cancellation of removal to apply for a concurrent 212H waiver. Again, the waiver, the self-defense waiver is a waiver of the Attorney General's authority to actually launch a removal prosecution. It's not the Attorney General's authority to waive a finding of removability that has already been entered. I would ask that this court remand the matter to the board and find in favor of the petitioner, but at the very least, because the board did not acknowledge any ambiguity in the statute at all and addressed it as a matter of definitive law, that the matter should be remanded to the board for further analysis. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I asked my colleagues, do you have any other questions you'd like to ask of counsel?
I have none.
Nothing for me.
Okay, thank you. We thank both counsel for their excellent arguments today and their excellent briefing as well. We'll take this case under advisement. Thank you again for doing this via Zoom. We're appreciative and we hope we get to see you live soon. We'll ask thank you and be well, and we'll ask the clerk to call the next case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.